My name is Nicolas Bardonnet, and I'm a photo choreographer and multimedia artist, photographer, etc. My company is Westwater Arts, and to go way back, way back in time, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but I didn't live there for very long. I lived there for about 6 or 7 years, approximately, and then we moved out west, actually. And I've lived in a number of different places between South Dakota, Montana, Washington, Arizona. I lived in Canada for a time. I went to high school in Canada. And then more recently in California, Utah, Mexico. We travel a lot. We travel a lot both for work as well as just to explore. And the art form that I do is called symphonic photochoreography. And you can learn lots about it from our website, but I'll try to give you a brief overview of what that is. Symphonic photochoreography is essentially the performance of large-scale panoramic imagery that is synchronized or choreographed to the live performance of symphonic music. And through that process, it's a very tight and precise integration of the imagery with the music, and the character, as well as the feel, as well as the pacing of the imagery is very much in line with the character, the feel, and the pacing of the music. And that seamless integration is a beautiful thing to not only create, but to watch as an audience member. With the creative process, I do oftentimes set, especially the newer pieces that I've created, set them to multiple different music options. And sometimes the music comes first, or a primary piece of music comes first, and then the visual concept comes. Sometimes it's the other way around, where I have a visual concept in mind, and then I begin the searching process for appropriate music that would fit that mood and feel of what I'm going for, ultimately, with the integration. In terms of pairing multiple different pieces of music with the same visual content, that typically has to do with the mood and feel of the music. For instance, one of the pieces we'll be doing here in Fort Collins is called Ghosts of the Mist. And that particular piece is set to 6 different composers. The piece that we'll be doing in Fort Collins with the orchestra here is Mahler's Adagietto. However, that's set to Sibelius, that's set to Debussy, Satie, Liadov, etc. There's several others. And if you were to listen to all of those different pieces of music, while the character is different and the sequencing would be different of the visuals based on that character and that pacing, etc., the overall feel, you can have a general feel of, for that particular piece, it's very moody and atmospheric and mysterious, etc. And those pieces all, and contemplative too, those pieces all have those qualities. And so they're linked with that. And then when in the creative process, when I'm thinking about finding different music options, I look at those aspects in terms of the feel of the music. I listen to them a lot before I commit to wanting to use one of those particular options. And then the actual visual sequencing that occurs with that would be different between each of those music options. So the Mahler piece that we're doing here in Fort Collins is completely different in its visual progression, because the music is different in its musical progression from, say, the Sibelius Swan of Tuonela, which is another great pairing of that imagery, but very different in their pacing, especially. So the imagery, while it uses the same pool in a sense of imagery, it's spread out differently throughout the piece, and there's more, certain things have more punch to them because they come in at certain places, and other things are different in the Mahler piece. And it's that actually, for me, that's a lot of fun doing that as well, because I get to re-explore and reinterpret the imagery with the new piece of music, with the new composition. And in a way, I get to remix the piece. That process too, when I remix something for a new version of music from the original creation, oftentimes I actually revisit the previous version, almost all the time actually, I revisit the previous version, the original version, quote unquote, and then I start to rehash that as well, because I learn certain things, or I reinterpret certain things, or discover new images that I didn't know I had in my library that fit well with this other piece, that I then try to find a way to reintegrate back into the original version. So it's an ongoing process of development, of production. And every single time we do these concerts with orchestras, I'm almost always fine-tuning something more or adding different imagery or thinking about the timing, etc., even leading up to the concert. And I do this during the concert as well, through rehearsals, etc. And what I do in terms of the live visual performance, I'm actually live cueing the imagery as well. So we, through our rehearsals that we have together, in this case with Wes Kenny, the maestro in Fort Collins, we work together to find a tempo in that particular piece of music that serves as the basis for our tempo, for the live performance tempo. And through that process, through our two rehearsals that we have together, I make changes there, and I consult with the maestro about the best particular way to approach the tempo, and if there are any issues, etc., which there, usually everything goes very smoothly, which is nice. And then at the concert time, we have a very nice seamless integration of the imagery with the music. The transitions that I like to use, I think of them as being very elegant. I don't want them to be overly distracting with the music. And sometimes you can have certain effects that would maybe take too much attention away from the music. It's always, with me, it's sort of a balance between the two. For the creation of the pieces, the image transitions that I use are very much tied to the pacing and the feel of a given section of music. And oftentimes what I really like to do, I think of these transitions as being elegant pairings with the music. And I use a lot of dissolves, and I really love the long dissolves as well, where you get to kind of register what's going on in that space in between the dissolves between images. I pay a lot of attention to that space in between images when they're dissolving, because you can pick out patterns, or there are things, there are relationships that are constructed in the sequencing of the images, and when you get to spend more time with them in those periods of time when they're dissolving into one another, there's a lot of sort of metadata there that I hope that the audience members can get something out of, because the construction of the pieces, it takes quite a long time, and there's a lot of thought going into the actual image sequencing and how that relates to the music and how that relates to the sort of progression of the content. So while I would never describe the pieces that I create as being a narrative structure per se, but there is sort of a loose narrative quality to them, in that the relationship of the images and the relationship of the content that I'm creating should be apparent. And the patterns, whether that be something in nature or something in a city or portraiture, etc. I shoot a lot of different things for these projects, depending on the project. It should be very apparent in terms of the choices that were made in the artistic process to get to that final point, where we do the actual performance. My background is very eclectic, and while I am very much self-educated in classical music, I'm a musical lover in general, and that goes across many different genres of music. So my influences are quite broad, not only visual but also musical. Classical music-wise, I would say that I'm inspired by certain pieces of music over others in some regards, as many people are. And there are certain pieces that just sort of that speak to me. And through the process of doing this work, I've learned a lot about the different variety of music that is out there in the classical music scene, and it's been very encouraging to work. And that's one reason why I work with multiple different music options, because it almost seems like sometimes one is not enough. You need to have a different reinterpretation, because there's so many pieces of great music out there. And being able to explore those pieces of music and being able to learn more about them in the process, and through the work with the orchestras as well and with the music directors, it's always a learning experience, and it's a really beautiful thing to see all of that come together and then inform the whole creative process. Working with the music specifically, I would say that when I approach a new project, sometimes it does occur where an orchestra will approach me and say, we have this piece of music that we want to perform, but we want to add something additional to it. We want you to create a visual accompaniment to go with that music to enhance it during the performance for our audience. That happens occasionally. What mostly happens, though, is where I am inspired by a piece of music, or I'm inspired by a given visual subject that I want to explore further, and then I either find that piece of music or something falls on my lap. Sometimes there are nice surprises where I'm just on the internet and happen to be on YouTube listening to some music samples, and then all of a sudden there's a recommendation that occurs, and I'm like, wow, that's going to fit really well with X, Y, and Z. And so it happens both ways, where the music is given to me, or I go out and seek the music, or I have the initial music already in mind, and then I seek out the given visual topic that I want to explore. In the case of the Fort Collins concert that we're going to be doing here, there's a variety of those different things actually at work. Two of the pieces that we'll be performing are music that the orchestra did not provide. I provided those pieces of music in the repertoire, and they chose from those particular pieces of music. However, we're doing something really special in Fort Collins as well, which is a community piece. And with that, the community of Fort Collins has submitted the photography to the orchestra, which then came to me, and we worked together to select pieces of music that we thought would be appropriate for the themes that we were going to be exploring, the visual themes that we were going to be exploring in the piece. So we selected two short pieces, one by Richard Meyer and the second by Calvin Custer, which are really fun pieces of music. They're quite different. They're short and sweet, but the feel of the two pieces is totally different. And the first one has a nice slow progression, and we're sort of painting a picture of the context of Fort Collins, mostly the natural environment and the things that people really appreciate being in Colorado and being so close to the mountains, etc. The second piece is all about the people in Fort Collins and the really cool things that they're doing, whether that be kayaking or doing marathons or biking, which is huge here, or drinking beer, which is also huge here, or going out with their dogs. There's lots of dog imagery in that second piece. And that process of creating these community pieces is really fun, because you don't know necessarily what kind of imagery when you start a project like this. You don't know what kind of imagery you're going to receive. It also makes the participants of the project, they're sort of co-collaborators then with the orchestra. And there's extra motivation to come to the concert and, you know, see their images up there on these giant screens above the orchestra. And it's really fun to see it all come together. And there's lots of sort of surprises in the imagery that you never would have thought of. And as part of that process, you know, I learn a lot about the communities as well, and try to create something that's like characteristic, not only of the music, of course, but of the community additionally. And yeah, it's really fun to see it all come together, and I'm really excited to share it as well with the audience here in Fort Collins. The number of images that we use in a given piece depends on a couple of factors. One most definitely is the tempo of the music. That's a big one. And I tend to choose pieces of music that are more melodic and have a slower progression at times, depending on the subject again. We have a piece that's set to Copland's Rodeo, which is quite fast in two of its movements and very appropriate for the rodeo action that's happening with the imagery. However, in the case of like the Mahler Adagietto that we'll be doing in Fort Collins, it's most definitely a slow progression of music, a slower tempo, which allows the audience to soak in the imagery. And so in most of our pieces, if not all of our pieces, we use hundreds of images that are transitioning, very thoughtfully transitioning too. It's not necessarily, I would say it's quality over quantity in that sense. I don't try to cram every single image that I can, especially that I've shot in creating these pieces. I shoot thousands of images, sometimes tens of thousands of images. I just got back from, several months ago, got back from Mexico shooting a new project there, and I haven't counted officially yet, but I would say I probably photographed 40 or 50,000 images, which eventually will be pared down to maybe 500 or 600, something like that, of images. So it gives you a sense of how that distillation happens with the creative process. All that stuff is happening well behind the scenes of these actual performances with the orchestras. But the inspiration that comes from the music and the tempo that comes from the music definitely dictates the amount of imagery used as well. And so with a piece like the Mahler that we're going to be doing here, it is a slow progression, and it allows me to have a lot of nice slow dissolves between imagery and create those relationships between the images that are being presented in the sequence. Whereas something that's faster, it has a different feel, it has a different energy to it. And in Fort Collins, we're doing these two pieces for the community piece. And you'll notice that in the first quote-unquote half, the Meyer version, which is slowly developing the context of Fort Collins and the environment and some images of animals, etc., that people have submitted. Whereas in the second half, it's showing people and activity and energy, and so that music is very lively. And it, when I was creating it, I definitely was tapping my foot frequently, listening to it just by default, because it's very fun music, and it works perfectly with the imagery of the activity and the cool things that people are doing in Fort Collins, because it's a very active community. In any given piece, I would say, depending on the length of the music, that can vary between probably 10 minutes to 25 minutes. I have worked on a much larger commission for the Royal Scottish National Orchestra and the Toronto Symphony, which was for the complete Mauve Lost. That was a very extended, big project, and that was an 80-minute piece of music. That's by far the longest piece of music I've ever worked with. It involved two separate trips, two separate photographic trips to the Czech Republic. The first was done in the early summer, and the second was done in the fall, to photograph not only variety in subject matter, but also I've done extensive research leading up to this project. Because it's such a long piece of music, I wanted to add a lot of variety of imagery as well and different subjects to explore and paint a picture, if you will, of the Czech Republic and the culture as it is today, as well as exploring some of its past, which is quite rich as well. The piece of music that the Royal Scottish National Orchestra and the Toronto Symphony chose to highlight with photo choreography was Smetana's Mauve Lost. Mauve Lost essentially is Czech. It translates to my homeland. And Smetana, Bedřich Smetana, is one of the primary, aside from Dvořák, is one of the primary Czech composers who's performed today. And so the idea of painting the picture of the Czech Republic through this art form was very appealing to them. To provide an in-depth, over 80 minutes, you can explore something in great detail. And so that particular piece is very different than some other pieces that I create. For instance, Ghosts of the Mist, that we'll be doing here with the Fort Collins Symphony, that explores the landscape of the Pacific Northwest. Whereas the piece Mauve Lost, it's very long in length, and it explores the landscapes, the small towns, the large cities like Prague, as well as many regional hubs. There's portraiture, there's some macro photography, and so you have one movement that may be depicting certain visual subject matter that another movement doesn't have at all, but it has something completely different because the feel of the music is completely different. And that's a lot of fun as well, to work with a longer piece of music that has different sections that allows you to explore different topics. And I do something similar to that with the 10 or 15 or 20 minute pieces that I work with that are one solid, so to speak, movement. Oftentimes the music takes you in different places. It has a different feel, it has different sections. And so what I really like to do style-wise is create vignettes, short vignettes that explore different subject matter and then relate to the next vignette, etc. That allow the audience to sort of follow that loose narrative that I'm constructing with the imagery and with the music. And that style seems to be quite effective at communicating a given subject in a condensed period of time. Ghosts of the Mist was a production that spanned several months, off and on, of camping in the winter months along the coastline of the Pacific Northwest, mostly on the Olympic Peninsula, but parts of Oregon as well, and parts of southern Washington. And during the winter months, there's virtually no one around on the coastline of the Pacific Northwest. And the weather is very moody and atmospheric. You get a lot of fog and a lot of rain and a lot of very uniform colors. And it was magical to photograph during that time. And occasionally the sun comes out and everything just has its glow to it. That production, I went maybe 5 or 6 times, extended camping trips along the coastline. And over 3, 4, 5 days for a given trip, I was able to photograph a lot of material. And I think I ran into maybe 3 people the whole time I was out there. It was very sparse because of the winter months. And I was going for that as well. There was a certain melancholy, if you will, but also a beauty in that remoteness and that isolation that you feel. It almost felt like you were the first person to walk those shores because there was virtually no one around and the weather is very intimate during that time. And that production, photographically, it spanned probably 3 months, I would say, off and on between shooting for that project. The actual production time of creating the original version of that took another 2 months of not only sorting everything out initially, cataloging all the imagery that I had photographed, and then starting to make sense of it by organizing it into different subjects and how it would relate to other subjects, etc., and relates to the music, and kind of doing a blueprint, if you will, to get ready to start mapping it out with the music. That process takes at least a month for a project of that length. And also, then there's the process of like selecting the actual music and the sections in the music that I'm going to be working with. And that process can take a while. Sometimes there are quick surprises where I stumble across a piece of music and I'm like, wow, that's perfect. Sometimes I hear a piece of music at a concert where I'm working on something completely different, and that piece of music sticks with me and I have that idea for later. But in the case of Ghosts of the Mist, so about 3 months for the shooting, the photography for the production, another 2 months or so for the actual distilling and production and organizing, and I would say probably another month to month and a half, maybe 2 months for the actual sequencing of the imagery with the music. At least getting to a point where I had a draft to then work with. And once I have a draft, I let it sit for some time, and then I revisit it later and make further tweaks to it. So all in all, that project more than likely took 8 months. I would say 8 or 9 months, give or take. And that's about normal. That's about normal for me. I can work very quickly. I work very well off momentum, and I like to be in a project mode. And so every day that I work on something like that, it's building up to that final time when I have that final draft. So I like to keep that in mind, and I really enjoy shooting in project mode as well in terms of making the original photography, because not only do I have a piece of music in mind frequently that I'm trying to match the character and feel of, but every day is a bit of a surprise when I go out and there's unexpected things that encounter. Oftentimes I'm doing this by myself as well, so I meet people as part of the process, and that's a whole thing that goes on behind the scenes even that most people don't even get to see, and I love to be able to talk about that occasionally in pre-concert talks and things of that nature. This is the little idiosyncrasies of travel that occur when shooting for these productions. And with a project like the Mavlas piece, that probably took a year and a half to assemble because of the length of it. But again, once the cogs start turning for a particular project, it goes faster than you initially think. When I first thought about the Mavlas project, I was like, wow, this is 80 minutes of music. This is going to take 3 years to assemble. But it's surprising, like, once you get going on something that you can start to tick away at it very quickly. And as you tick away at the smaller steps, the bigger steps don't look so far away, and then eventually you're at that point and you've got a final draft. It's nice when I can just focus all my energy on one particular project, but oftentimes that's not the reality. I have to juggle between different projects and assemble them simultaneously, with one being sooner usually and one being later. And so I try to prioritize that, and sometimes I feel like working on a particular project over another project, so I try to work with that momentum and that train of thought, because it is an artistic process as well, so you have to be inspired by that particular subject and by that process at a given time to really make a lot of headway on it. And some days are definitely better than others in terms of progress. So sometimes I'll be able to put together, if things are really flowing well, I'll be able to put together maybe half a piece with the synchronization, the rough synchronization at least, of the music with the imagery. Other times it takes a lot longer than that, and it can most definitely, like anything, it can be very much a process of whether that, it's always a lot of fun to do, but some days are certainly more productive than others. What we do is very unique. There is not really anyone, to my mind, that does this same type of thing, tight synchronization of visuals with live symphonic music full time. Sometimes there are kind of one-off projects that happen in various communities where there is a local production of some sort that the orchestra wants to pair. So for instance, like with Pictures at an Exhibition, that's been a very popular piece for imagery orchestras to pair imagery in some form with their music that they're performing for that given piece. So there are a lot of local productions that happen, or like with the planets, for instance. That's another thing. We don't have imagery set to either of those things, but oftentimes you do see local productions with those, with local production companies. In terms of the actual, we wear a lot of hats with what we do with symphonic photochoreography, and there's a lot of steps that occur behind the scenes that you would never think about in terms of producing these pieces and working with orchestras and the sensitivity that has to come with working with music. That is much more involved than it might seem if you just go to a concert and you see the imagery projected, you know, seamlessly with the music. I wish it were that simple all the time. I was fortunate enough to be able to work with a mentor in going through this process of learning more about photo choreography and then wearing all of those hats that I described myself. I work with an individual, James Westwater. He actually he's my predecessor to this. He's retired now, but he developed this art form several decades ago. And he's actually my wife's father as well, and it could have evolved organically where I started working with him. I had a similar set of skills and interests. It was just essentially an artistic experiment that he had something in him to try. This was back in the 1970s, and while things have evolved greatly since then, the basis of it is somewhat similar. The technology is different, the style is different, etc. The music that we're working with is different. He had this idea in mind of doing a multimedia expose, if you will, of imagery with music, and had a connection in his hometown, Columbus, Ohio, with the Columbus Symphony, and they just went for it. And audiences loved it, the orchestra loved it. It was adding a different dimension to concerts that wasn't there. And he started to run with that idea and found a lot of success in it. And I was fortunate enough to work with him for 5 years. I've been at this for about 7 years now, a little bit over 7 years. And so James retired about 2 to 3 years ago, and I've been running the show since then, and it's been great. We've evolved it even further from that point, and we continue to put a lot of projects in the pipeline and thinking about working with different styles of music in different venues, as well as orchestras abroad and domestic orchestras most definitely still. And it's been a lot of fun and quite a ride at developing the imagery for the music for these concerts. It's very much a family business. We wear a lot of different hats in doing these productions. I do a lot of the creative side of it. Erin does some of the... Erin, my wife, who I'm also very fortunate to work with, she's our operations manager. And she does a lot of the logistical planning. She interfaces a lot with the staff at orchestras that we're working with leading up to the concert. I do some of that as well. Depending on what the task is, we have our bases covered, and we're both quite versatile individuals who have a whole gamut of different skill sets that we can employ when we need to. And Erin's been great at when I'm in project mode and I need to focus, she helps me to kind of create a little bit of a buffer to help with some of those external requests that are coming through, and I'm able to really focus and stay in creative mode, because it's always a balance to not only have the administrative side of the business, but also the creative side of the business, and you can't really sacrifice one or the other. You have to maintain a balance there. But depending on what project demands are at that given time, or concert production demands, etc., there's always this sort of process of determining how you're going to spend your time in any given day. I rely on having a very responsive timing with each image transition that I work with, and so it takes the pressure off of the orchestras to have me live cueing the imagery. It also takes a lot of the pressure off the music directors, who don't have to worry about how is the synchronization going, what is going on above me versus what am I doing musically. We take a lot of that concern away from them by live cueing everything. For the concert collaborations that we work on with orchestras, we provide all the equipment typically. and that involves multiple projectors as well as the screens. And both Aaron and I participate in the setup of the equipment as well as the performance with the equipment and the takedown of the equipment. We usually work with crew members who the orchestra provide, but the setup itself, it takes a good part of the day, most definitely. We get the screens up, that's quite a process, as well as the projectors, and then the all of the fine tuning that goes into working with the projectors, whether that be color balance or focus or alignment, keystoning, etc. But we work with the same equipment all the time, so the process is very consistent. And leading up to concert collaborations, I usually have a call, a tech call with whether that be the production manager or the tech director at the venue, etc., where we discuss the ins and outs of the technical details. So when we get to the actual venue, we know what's what, in a sense. We know where we're going to hang the screens, we know where we're going to place the projectors, we know the technical details that are going to be necessary to execute the concert collaboration as seamlessly as possible. And because we always use the same equipment, that also gives us a sense of consistency and reassurance that everything goes without a hitch. We don't work with rented equipment for that reason. There's a lot of variables that we like to be able to control. Because everything is done live, you try to control as many variables as possible so that you don't have surprises. A lot of the pieces that I've created have been non-commissioned pieces. It's nice when commissions come around and that there is already a sense of here's the music that you're going to be working with, here's a budget. But many of the pieces that I create, especially some of the ones more recently, I have done myself. They've been kind of a brainchild, like Iceland, for instance. I thought, Iceland is such a fantastic and magical place, and it begs to be paired with strong music, powerful music that brings that character and that strength and that the formation, in a sense, of that magical little island, Iceland, into context and into the audience, or into concert halls, and pairing that imagery with that music is just a really beautiful thing when you have such two different strong components that come together and create this sort of symbiosis. With Iceland, that was very much like a brainchild. I said I had been wanting to go to Iceland for years and shoot a project, and I was still thinking about the different music that I wanted to work with, and there was one piece in particular, Vaughan Williams' Fantasia on a theme for Thomas Tallis, which has that kind of epic quality that I was seeking with the imagery, that I knew that imagery lived in Iceland, and I could go there for several months and photograph that imagery, and with a bit of luck, come back with lots of great material to then synchronize with the music. And so I did it. I went to Iceland, and I flew into Reykjavik, rented a vehicle, and I camped the whole time for 2 months, various different places across the whole island, in the interior as well, in the mountainous regions. Typically, I like to go by myself for productions, because there's a level of focus that's required and just a level of thoroughness and detail that I like to become absorbed in the productions that I'm doing. And I wouldn't say it would be fun to be around me necessarily when I'm in that tunnel vision, in that mode of being there. Erin's seen it to a degree, and I think she'd rather not participate most of the time because it gets a little boring for her. But I'm you know, in it very much so. And so when I went to Iceland, I went there for a little over 2 months at the beginning of the summer when you have these exceptionally long days of light. I think you get 20 to 21 hours of light in June especially. And then in the period of time when the sun is supposed to quote-unquote set, it does literally set, but it comes right back up in the same location. And in the interim, the sort of twilight period, you could go for a hike, you could read the newspaper, and it's this magical lighting where like the golden hour actually lasts for about 5 hours because of this extended daylight that you have there. And the fact that the sun never really fully gets dark. Not until August actually was I able to start seeing a few stars. And this is in a remote location in the mountains where you expect to see lots of stars, but because it's so bright still. And so what that amounted to is many, many hours throughout the day of photographing, because I had lots of ideas that I wanted to explore and lots of locations that I had researched. And everywhere that I went, it was just phenomenal. One thing that really surprised me about Iceland was how much water there is everywhere. There are waterfalls and rivers and gorgeous places and vistas that I just couldn't have imagined that were there. And there's been some phenomenal music as well, more contemporary classical music that's been composed by Icelandic composers. And there was something to that as well, and that was part of the inspiration of wanting to go there. These different artists that I had come across, and I thought, well, this music must be inspired by these vast kind of primeval landscapes where you can see essentially the earth because of its volcanic history there still being formed. And that to me is very interesting. And so working with music that's very epic and draws upon that sort of primal energy that you see in Iceland, and that vastness and the grandeur that exists there, and the different environments too that you approach. It's such a diverse place, Iceland, for being such a isolated small island. It's the greenest of green and the bleakest of bleak at times. And so that particular project came to a head, and I now call it Sagaland, which seems very fitting, not only because of the Norse tradition of people originally inhabiting Iceland and going there from Scandinavia, but also the impressive sagas that they created about these mythical creatures and these landscapes, these very foreign landscapes that they were approaching, these steaming places that were geothermal. And that was appealing to me, and it made sense when you were there that this is Iceland, and this is the place where these sagas were written about this magical place. And so being able to explore that, after thinking about it for many years of wanting to do something there, being able to actually then explore it is fantastic. And that piece will actually be premiering next month in April with the Anchorage Symphony up in Alaska, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. We're doing it to a particular piece of music by Alan Havanas called Mysterious Mountain, which has a very exotic quality to it as well that brings out that sort of primal beauty that you see in Iceland. The programming considerations that orchestras look at when they think about programming our work, that usually comes from our repertoire. We have a set repertoire of about 15 pieces. That's sort of an ever-changing landscape as I add more pieces to it as well. But they mix and match different pieces. Sometimes for a concert, orchestras will choose one particular piece and they'll choose a music option to go along with that. Other times, and what is more likely, is that they choose 2 to 3 pieces and pair them together, like what we're doing in Fort Collins. Sometimes they do something completely new, like this community piece that we're doing in Fort Collins, or they do a new commission as well and then pair something from our repertoire. There's a lot of variety that can occur with those, with that programming process, in part because there's a lot of different factors that go into orchestras planning for their seasons and the season themes, and they try to find things that will work well. So in our repertoire, there's everything from 2 pieces I put together recently, which are companion pieces that commemorate the 100th anniversary of World War I and the 75th anniversary of World War II, set to some great evocative music. And orchestras have loved pairing those 2 different pieces together, and they actually pool from historic archival imagery that I collected from a dozen different countries to show a well-rounded picture of what was going on, especially the individuals that were involved in the war from multiple different countries. And so those pieces are frequently programmed together. Another piece that is a newer piece in our repertoire is called National Park Suite, and that actually commemorates the 2016 centennial of the National Park Service. And today, actually, I'm fortunate enough to announce that piece is going to be premiered by the National Symphony at Wolf Trap this upcoming summer. This is their first day of announcing it to their patrons, so now I can technically announce it to you.